Coming to you from Indianapolis, Indiana, the gaming capital of the world, it's episode 75 of Game On with Cody and John.
This is Game On with Cody and John, the uncommon podcast for the common gamer, bringing you the latest and greatest from the world of tabletop gaming, board games, card games, RPGs, and miniatures wargaming, news and discussions on gaming and gamer culture, plus reviews of some of the best games on the market. And now, from the Game On Studios in Indianapolis, Indiana, here are Cody Jones and John Richard.
Well, howdy gamers, it is Game On with Cody and John. I'm Cody.
And I'm John. Welcome to the Uncommon Podcast for the Common Gamer. It's been another great 2 weeks of gaming in the gaming capital of the world. How you doing, Cody?
Doing all right. I have to ask, are you actively cheering for the Colts to lose at this point?
No, not really. I got to stick with my Colts. I got to root for them to win, even though I don't think it's going to happen for a while. But I'm not in the camp that thinks that the first round draft pick is a guarantee that we're going to get any better. I mean, they put a lot of faith on the internet, especially in this Andrew Luck guy from, is he from Cal, Stanford?
Stanford.
That he's going to be the second coming of Peyton Manning, but I've seen too many really good quarterbacks in college look terrible in the NFL. So
Colt McCoy.
No, not Colt McCoy.
Oh, sorry.
Maybe like Vince Young. Yeah,
Vince Young, also from Texas.
Yeah, well, okay, I was trying to throw you a bone there.
Major Applewhite.
Okay, he's never in the NFL. He's the assistant offensive coordinator.
Anywho, we've had people ask us.
Yeah.
I'm not either in the camp of actively rooting for them to lose, but I'm not so upset when they do at this point, because even if they trade away the pick or do something with it, I think we can get a lot for it. So it's almost just kind of a comedy at this point.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But all that time not watching football gives us more time to play games. See, I brought it around.
Very nice, yeah. Because not much going on in the football world.
No.
And it's sad, too. And sorry, just to go back to it. It's sad, too, because we have the Super Bowl coming to Indianapolis.
That's the worst part of it.
Yeah.
Is because we're my beloved city. I'm so proud of my city. The city of my birth.
Oh, me too.
Has the Super Bowl, and from what they've been doing around downtown, it's going to be fantastic. And
I signed up to be a Super Bowl volunteer.
I know. I should have done that. I don't know what I was.
I'm going to be working at the Super Bowl Village for a few shifts.
It takes a village to raise a Super Bowl.
Anyway, but you're right. It's kind of disappointing that it's going to be no Colts this year.
Yeah.
But we're here not to talk about football or any other sport, but we're here to talk about games, board games, card games, role-playing games, all that stuff that we normally talk about.
Mm-hmm.
Cody, what are we talking about today?
Well, our big topic is the phenomenon known as Kickstarter.
Have you heard of it?
Yeah, you might have. We're not going to specifically talk about, you know, what's hot on Kickstarter or what now, but more this whole thing that's just exploded over the last year or so, maybe even a little less than that.
Well, think back to like Alien Frontiers. Yeah, I think it's been about a year and a half, something like that. Yeah,
but we're going to talk about it, and you know, is it a flash in the pan? Is it kind of the future how board games get published? We'll talk about it.
Yeah, and we're also going to be doing a review of a brand new game from Stratus Games called Eruption. Which is about
not erupt, Tom.
Come on, Tom. But Eruption, which is a game about a volcano and lava and stuff.
Erupting.
Yeah, it's not just a clever name. But we're going to start off with a rundown as usual. You ready to get into this?
Let's do it.
All right.
All right, it is time for the rundown. But as tradition dictates, before we start the rundown, it is time to give our due penance, our due homage to our great sponsor, Myriad Games, who sponsors Game On with Cody and John on behalf of friendly professional game stores everywhere. John,
everywhere.
Tell us about Myriad Games.
Well, Myriad Games, as you know, if you've listened to any episodes of the show, is a great local game store in New Hampshire, but their scope is much wider than that. They have a great selection of games. They have a great website. They have their MVP memberships. It's just, you know, it's just a great place to find games, and it's a great place that they've been releasing on. They're also involved in Gamesalute.com. If you go on that website, they've been talking about one game that I'm excited about, which is the new Kingdom Builder from Donald Vaccarino.
Donald X Vaccarino.
X Vaccarino. Donald Xavier Vaccarino, who was the designer of Dominion. And it's this this new board game with, I don't even really know what it's about, except it's got a board and some
good
pieces.
Reporting.
And it
good
looks,
reporting.
Well,
it's got a board. It's got some pieces.
Yeah, and
it may have a box.
People say that it has that kind of gateway game quality. quality to it. So I'm interested in picking up a copy of that. So I'm contacted Dan, and hopefully that'll be coming to me soon, as soon as it comes out. But things like that, where if you have a game that you're just looking to get and you're not sure if you can get it from your local game store, always check your own local game store, you know, your own friendly professional game store. But, you know, check with Mary Dan as well, because Mary can definitely hook you up with those games that might be hard to find.
That's right. If you're looking for games with boxes, boards, and pieces, MaryGames.com.
You're such a pitch man. You should be on Mad Men.
Thank you.
Very nice. All right, well, let's go to the rundown here, stuff we've been playing the last couple weeks. Cody, give us a rundown.
Boom. Okay, so I at Extra Life, you know, I didn't really mention
We already talked about Extra Life.
I didn't mention any purchases.
Yeah, oh, that's true.
Didn't really buy all that much. I did buy a Battle Foam bag. I think I mentioned that.
The War Machine bag. Yeah,
yeah, the big, mm-hmm. big thing. But
copycat.
Yeah, I know. But other things about, I bought a copy of Federation Commander, because a lot of people, when I said I was going to try Starfleet Battles, they said, you should try Federation Commander instead. It's more streamlined. You get the same feel. And
is it the same company?
Yeah, same company, the Amarillo Design Bureau.
Okay, so what's different about it then?
So it's basically, so I bought Starfleet Battles. I bought the base set of that, the Captain's Edition basic set. And as I mentioned, a guy I go to church with, he was a longtime player, and he kind of taught me the rules, and we played a few games. I got a feel for it. And I just didn't, it was just way too long and too complicated for what it was, you know. I want kind of, I like the idea of marking damage on boxes on ships. I think that's cool, but it just needed to go faster for me. So I traded that in, and I got Federation Commander, which is Starfleet Battles, but in, you know, I don't know the exact, and maybe like half the time. It's just like a faster, more streamlined version of it. Came out in the last few years. It's definitely newer than, didn't come out in the 70s like Starfleet Battles, but it's pretty much exactly the same in setting and in style, but they just streamline a lot of the more fiddly bits of it, and
it's still like kind of hex encounter.
Yeah, it's definitely hex encounter, and it's all it looks identical to Starfleet Battles.
Oh,
but,
okay.
But the rule set dumps a lot of the little things just for faster gameplay. So I got a test game of it with my buddy Morgan, and we just flew a little Federation frigate and a little Klingon scout ship and pew-pewed each other, you know. It's a fun little game. I want to give it a couple more plays. I know you have no interest whatsoever in trying it.
None whatsoever.
Well, you got to try once. You'll try any game once, right?
I think that's your rule.
You'll try actually. Any game once. So yeah. I look forward to when we can play Federation Commander. Klingon Border is the one I got.
That's fine. It's mainly the length that scared me off of Starfleet Battle. So if you say it's more streamlined, I'll definitely give it
a go. I mean, Morgan and I, we did, even with learning rules, we did just a ship-on-ship skirmish in 30 minutes, 40 minutes.
It
was pretty short. What else have I been playing? I played Mansions of Madness. I finally got that to the table again.
Nice.
The one, I like that game more and more each time I play it, but the one thing I hate more and more about it is the setup time.
Yeah.
Because even if you're good at it, even if you're good at setting up the game, it still will take you 20 minutes mm-hmm. minimum, just because you got to put the cards in, you got to double check the cards, you got to get everything sorted and all that. So I'm going to try a different direction.
Okay.
On Board Game Geek, someone had the idea of making exploration tokens, basically just like put a glass bead in every room. And so what you do is, when you as the keeper are sorting things at the beginning, it tells you what cards to sort out, but it doesn't tell you which rooms. So right. so you take those 20, 25 cards, whatever it is, and you just set that aside as a small stack near you. And then whenever the investigators go into a room, you just look up what room it is, and you pull out the card of the 20 and 25 that they find. So you're basically exchanging a big chunk of setup time at the beginning for small dinky chunks in between, But I think it would flow better, and plus it also eliminates the heroes or the investigators know where to go because they look to see where the big stacks are, and you know, because with Mansions of Madness, you know, the rooms that have, you know, a stack of four cards, you're like, probably something going to be there, you know.
That's so. Metagaming, man. We don't do that.
Yeah.
Sure. That sounds like an interesting idea, and I guess you would do if someone got through part of the cards, like if they hit ran into a lock that they, you would then just have that stack of cards. Would you put that, go ahead and put that on the board then?
Yeah, or just set it aside. I probably wouldn't even put it on the board. Okay. I'd maybe like flip the token over to show that they're still working on it. You know, they've not cleared it. But yeah, so I'm going to try that. The other thing I'm going to try with Mansions of Madness is I posted this on our Facebook and Twitter feed, and someone asked about Mansions of Madness in our guild, and I posted a link to this as well. I don't know if I mentioned the guy that went completely bonkers with an Arkham Horror retheme. Not so much a retheme, but he like pimped it out.
Yeah, I think you like, real briefly mentioned it before. Okay. So
if you follow the link, go to the guild, and you can see the thread on it. But I think I may do that with Mansions. I mean, maybe not to quite that extreme, but I like the idea of getting the old trunk and like the... Because it's a game I really like. It has that storytelling element, and I just really like playing it. And Fantasy Flight's expanding it already. You know, they've released story packs, and they've announced the first expansion for it, Forbidden Alchemy, coming out. So I think I'm going to buy in. I really enjoy it. So I'm going to get the miniatures all painted up. And
you're going to paint the miniatures too?
Huh? Yeah. So we'll see what happens. So Mansions of Madness still exciting. I just want to play some of the other stories. I've only played two stories. Mm-hmm. I've run story number one about 800 times. I don't want to run it anymore. You ran the Classroom Curses one.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed that one, and I'd like to... I may have run that one, too, but I've only done the first two stories. Like, I've not even played the other three, so we need to get that to the table.
I like that they... How many of the new stories have they released? There's one was a print and play one, right?
Yeah. It's print on demand. It's not print and play.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So Fantasy Flight still produces it, but it's... But it's just they print it on demand. So there's two out now. I just ordered the two that are out. It's called, I think it's like the Silver Tablet. Bear with me. I think it's the Silver Tablet and...
Season of the Witch. Yeah.
And then at the latest kind of little mini con they did at the FFG Event Center, they released one called Till Death Do Us Part.
Oh.
And then they're going to have Forbidden Alchemy, which will probably have more stuff in it. So
that's cool, because I think we talked before when we reviewed that game is that those are the kind of things that are going to keep that game fresh, is if they keep churning out those stories. So you don't run the same one over and over again.
Right.
Very cool.
Yep. What else have I played? I played the end of the first Pathfinder Carrion Crown Adventure Path with my in-laws. We wrapped up the first session, and it went well. They did a good job. There's a big fight in the end, and they figured out the mystery, and they're feeling pretty good. But book two has got some pain to bring.
Ooh. Now, how do you feel about the Pathfinder starter box? Have you looked into that at all? Because I saw that briefly online.
Yeah, I saw it. I haven't really looked at it. I like the idea because Pathfinder desperately needed it.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, if you're new to RPGs and you pick up the core rulebook...
Daunting.
I mean, look at that thing. It's huge. Yeah. It's like 600 pages. So now there's a little more of an entry level. And from what I've seen, it looks great. And Paizo really does good work insofar as that. So I think it's a good move for them. They may need an intermediate product, I'm thinking, just from what I've seen of the beginner box. And people have already asked. It's like, well, what do we do once we go in for the beginner box? They're like, well, get the core rule book. I'm like, well, it seems like there may need to be a middle step, but...
Yeah.
I don't know.
Okay.
Let's see. That may be it on the game front. I'll go ahead and do other geekery while I'm here.
Go for it.
I'm playing Batman Arkham Asylum on the Xbox. Not Arkham City, not the new one. But
the first one, yeah.
But the old one.
Uh-huh.
And that's a really good game. It's a very surprising game because I'm not really much into action games on consoles just because I'm not very good at them.
Yeah.
But this is a puzzle game kind of set in that whole Batman...
That kind of detective-y...
Yeah, it's very much so. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it's a really good game.
Strangely enough, my boss at work was just today telling me that he's playing through that game as well.
Arkham Asylum?
Yeah, because he bought Arkham City and then he realized, oh, I don't want to play through that until I've played the first one. So he went and got it for, you know, I think he said it was relatively cheap.
Oh, yeah. I think you can get like a Game of the Year edition for like $20 probably.
Oh, wow. That's nice.
Yeah. So I've been playing that. And Friday, Skyrim Elder Scrolls V comes out for the Xbox.
Okay. Now explain to me Elder Scrolls, because I'm not a video game guy, and I had a friend at work ask me what exactly is that.
Okay,
It looks like it's kind of fantasy, right?
Yeah, it's a kind of high fantasy role playing game series.
Okay,
and each game is independent of the one that came before it. I mean, there's kind of common story thread. It's the same world, but like you don't have to play 4 to play 5. Like you could buy Skyrim Friday
jump right in,
and you would, you know, yeah. You might miss little like throwbacks to the older games, but 99% of the story you're going to get. So it's just kind of this high fantasy thing. They're very famous for a very deep world. and that it's not all about the main quest. It's a open sandbox style world. Like, you can ignore the main storyline for a good long time. Like, you can your character can join the Thieves Guild, or they can, you know, open a shop, or they can, you know, they can find a love interest, or like all these things. It's just this kind of deep, limitless world.
Oh,
so
okay.
It's really interesting. So, and like I said, this is only the fifth one in probably 10, 15 years. So they don't come out very often, but when they do, they're big hits. So,
oh, cool. Okay.
The only other thing is comics. Still reading the DC stuff. Batgirl's still my favorite. Just read number 3 today. It's
loving it, huh?
Phenomenal. Cool. Great writing.
You have a Batgirl figure on your
desk. I do. I'm smitten. What can I say?
Cool.
That's all I got.
That's it? All right. It's got a little bit lean.
Well, after Extra Life.
That's what I was going to say, is that mine's kind of lean too, I think, for the same reason as yeah. We gorged ourselves on games.
Yeah, get back to Extra
Life. Yeah. And I've actually been, I think I said this last fall, the same sort of thing. I've been really focusing on health stuff. So I've been going to the gym a lot lately. And
you're looking trimmer over there.
Thank you. I've lost almost 25 pounds.
Look at this
and
guy.
You're just trying to kind of focus on that. And last year, my exercise program got kind of derailed by a back problem. So I'm hoping to kind of keep things rolling here. So anyway, so I've been kind of focusing on that. I haven't been thinking as much about games, but I did go to the Game On Game Night a week or so ago, and a little sparsely attended.
Let's talk Game On stuff real quick. Well, let's talk Game On stuff. What are we doing here, right?
No, let's skip the Game On stuff.
I'm going to interject something.
Yeah.
The Game On Game Day.
Yeah.
November 19th, Saturday, November 19th, 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. at the Avon United Methodist Church. If you go to gameonpodcast.com, you can get all of the info.
Yeah, beautiful little link right at the top there.
And it is beautiful. And we want you to be there. So I don't mean to hijack your rundown.
No, it's fine.
But you got me thinking. We've already heard, and people have written in, that they are coming from out of the area, out of state to this. So there's lots of nice and inexpensive hotels nearby, and beautiful west side of Indianapolis.
Beautiful Avon, Indiana.
Yep. So come one, come all, bring your favorite games, and enjoy a great day of gaming with me and John.
Yeah, it won't be 24 hours of gaming, but it'll be about half that.
Yeah, it'll be, you'll get all your gaming that you want to get.
Yep, should be fun.
Going.
Get that going and stuff.
Yep.
So as I was saying, I was going to the Game On Game Night, which is at the same place where the Game On Game Day will be held, and it's a little sparsely attended, not exactly sure why. It would have been the day after Halloween, so maybe people were gorged out on candy.
It's All Saints Day, man.
No idea. Oh, it could be that, yeah.
That's probably not.
I don't know. Do people do stuff on All Saints Day?
Some churches do. Mine really doesn't. Like, not a special service or anything. No.
Okay. Anyway. Religion on.
Yes, sir.
But I got to play Star Trek Fleet Captains. Played a two-player game of that with my buddy Brian, and really enjoyed that one again. And I'm really liking it because of the encounter deck, more than just about anything else, is that encounter deck, that you every time you move into a space on the board and you explore it, there's a chance that you might have an encounter. And it's just when you explore it, so you can, roll the die and you might get an encounter card. And the nice thing is that there's a really large number of encounter cards, but in any given game, you may run through 10 of them, possibly. So I've played through two or three games of this now, and I'm still finding new cards. And it's a game that creates those cinematic moments, which I really like. And in this particular game, the cinematic moment was that Brian, playing the Federation, one of his ships got overrun with Tribbles.
Oh, no.
And I think that it said that he has to... you had to disable two out of your four systems every turn. You could choose which ones were disabled, but it's like the Tribbles overrun the engines or something, yeah. And you can't move. And so you'd have to choose that. And so he, at the same time that happened, there's some cards that are called stable wormholes. Hmm. And so it's like a tile. You open that up, and if you open up another one, then you can travel between them for free. And so I'm like, oh, here's my opportunity, because the wormhole card, he turned it over right in front of where all of his ships were. And so I'm like, I've got my big Klingon warship, and I'm like, oh, perfect. I'll go through the wormhole. So I get through the wormhole, and I attack his ship, and I do some damage to it and everything. So I'm like, hey, that was very successful, right? So he immediately then moves his tribble-infested ship right next to me, and then beams all of the Tribbles onto my ship.
Nice.
Which and then he has to give me the card, and now my ship, which just came out of the wormhole triumphantly, is now full of tribbles. So
now you know there was a Klingon tribble war.
Was there?
There really was.
No, and there wasn't.
Yes, there was.
Really?
In the episode of Deep Space Nine, of course, where they go back in time and they basically redo the Trouble with Tribbles episode.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And they do the Forrest Gump thing. So you have like Captain Sisko interacting with Captain Kirk.
What season was this?
Six?
Okay.
Five or six. I want to say six.
I'm going to have to dig through Netflix and look at that
one. Yeah, it's enough to where you could just watch that one. You don't have to...
Know the story or anything.
Even though you should watch...
No, I'll get to it, I promise. Yeah.
But no, you should just watch that one. But so Worf is along with them because he's in the cast at that point. Yeah. And they're talking and you know, the Klingons hate the Tribbles because Tribbles react... If you've ever seen the original episode,
oh, they react poorly.
They kind of squee and yeah. go away from Klingons, and so they were asking him about it, and he was talking about the great Klingon Tribble War, and the other funny thing, non Tribble related, is that you know the Klingons in the original series didn't have the ridges,
right?
They just had the pulled back hair, and so they all look at Worf. They're like, "Those are Klingons," and he's like, "We do not discuss it,"
because they never really explained how that happened, right?
They? In an episode of Enterprise, they tried to actually explain it, you know, some like genetic mutation or whatever, but that's lame. It's like, yeah, they just didn't have the makeup. I
got it. Right.
So the episode is Trials and Tribulations DS9. So look it up.
I'll have to check that one out this week.
That's like the third or fourth week in a row I've gotten a DS9 mention.
Yeah, good for you.
I'm going for the record.
Nice. You're going to find a way to shoehorn that in there no matter what, you know.
That's right. I'll just yell
We're talking about Euro games.
DS9.
So played that. That was great. Got to play a new game with Brian and Sean. Actually taught us this little card/board game called The Traitors of Carthage, which is a little game from Z-Man Games.
The Traitors or Traitors?
Traitors, T-R-A-D-E-R-S.
Oh, that's not nearly as interesting.
Yeah, well, and the game, it's essentially a card game, but it's almost difficult to describe how the game works, but except to say that it's very, very clever. That's the word Sean used to describe it, and I agree. It's a very clever game in that you're trying to... You have cards laid out in front of you and that are kind of a community row, and you can either take a card, in which case once a card is in your hand, then it's worth money. That's the value that's on the card. Or you can then spend money out of your hand to buy the cards that are in front of you.
Okay.
So it's like you can either take a card and then it can only be used as money. But if you buy the cards, then they're used as resources. They're just different colors. There's four different colors in the game.
Oh, I see.
So then once you've bought them, then you get those resources. And at a certain point, there's like on a little miniature board that has these little ships on it. And depending on how many cards you bought, it'll move the ship up a certain number of spaces. Once a ship gets to the very end, then that colored ship will score. And then cards that people have in front of them of that color will score. And there's even some spaces in the middle where it's like the ships get caught by pirates or something. And so those ships, people lose all of their cards of that color. And there's actually a really strange math equation that you have to figure out to know how many points that you get. It's like you take the... I'm not even going to get this right, but it's like you take the number of cards that you have and you multiply it by 5 or something, and then you round up to the nearest, and then you divide by 3 or something. It sounds really convoluted, but once you've done it a couple times, uh-huh, it's like it's just a way to sort of distill down the number of cards that you have into points. Then you turn those cards over, and that becomes your points pile. So these cards do multiple things in the game.
That does sound pretty clever.
Yeah, and it just takes a little bit a while to figure out when it's on your turn. You know, do I take a card, or do I try to buy it, or do I wait? There's even a mechanic where you can put a token to reserve a card so that no one else can get it. And knowing the timing of when to do those things is really interesting. So I really like that game a lot. Might even be one I'd consider picking up because it's pretty quick to play. But that's Traitors of Carthage from, I believe, Z-Man Games.
That sounds interesting.
Yeah. So that was pretty much it for the game on Game Nights. I had some other good games played. I had another raucous game of Lords of Vegas. I didn't play in it, but it was in the table next to me. And
did anyone stand up or hooting and hollering?
I didn't. There was hooting and hollering. I didn't see a stand-up die roll, but there was a lot of hooting and hollering. So I can't believe I only put it 11. It really is. It's a top 5 game, I think, for me.
And you know, now that you mention it, I did introduce some people. I introduced Sam and Jackie to Lords of Vegas. Mm-hmm. And I came from behind, snuck in, and won.
Nice.
Vegas, baby. Yeah.
I want to say that the game ended up in a tie for points.
So they went to cash?
And I think it might have... Did it go to points, or it might have been only? It was really close. It was down to like the last two people. So, no,
such a good game.
That's such a good game. As far as other stuff that I played, not a whole lot really. Haven't played too much with my kids. I did play. I don't think I mentioned this on the last show, but I played the Pokemon card game for the first time.
Oh, okay.
With Ethan, he's expressed a great interest in Pokemon lately. He's got some buddies at school that play with the toys and play the card game as well. So I'm like, oh, let's get a starter set. And I had asked Eric Summerer from the Dice Tower to bring some Pokemon decks to Extra Life and teach me how to play, but we just never got around to doing it. So it turns out it's really easy to learn how to play. It's a pretty simple game. It's really a lot like Magic, but it's like Magic if you only ever have one creature out at any given time, or one creature that can attack. You can basically have one creature out, one Pokemon out that's your attacker, your primary one. Then you can have a bench of up to five that kind of sit back in the wings. And on your turn, you know, you can attack with that one, or you can trade out, you know, so you can have a different active one. So they have different abilities and different resistance to, they have colors in the game, like, you know, that are called energies that, you know, some might have a resistance to green energy. And so, you know, there's some strategy there. And I was really surprised that for being really kind of more of a kids focused game, there's some strategy. Like it's not just and the deck building aspect of it, I think is, it could be even close to being as complex as Magic, because there's a lot of things that the different colors interact together. And so I really liked it. I think Ethan liked it too, and he won. So I'm, you know, fair and square too. So I think he enjoyed that one. So we may end up, I may have to go on eBay and, you know, buy the. Oh,
whoa.
Sorry. That was a little.
You really like Pokemon.
Totally kicked the microphone there. I may have to go and get like the, you know, the box of cards, the 1,000 cards for however many bucks, and do some deck building. So.
Nice.
What else? Well, you and I played a couple of things. You were over just a few days ago. We played Eruption, which we're going to talk about in a little bit. And I also played Innovation, which we haven't played in quite a while, I think.
I'd say one of us played Innovation.
Oh, yeah. Talk about that.
I destroyed John. I won with four age one cards.
Yeah, he never put an age two or higher card down at all. He had this, what was it, clothing?
It was clothing, good old clothing, because basically I could, I had for most of the game, I had two colors that John didn't have on his board, and I got to draw and score a one for each color I had that he didn't. And so as the ones and twos started getting gobbled up, I was just scoring threes and fours, and I was just doing clothing twice. So I was getting about 10 points a turn. And then just achieve. And
I was making it worse because I'm trying to find a way to combat this. So I keep drawing more cards. I mean, by the end of the game, I think I had four stacks in front of me, and each stack had three or four cards in it. So I'm trying to get things to mitigate this. And at the same time, all I'm doing is just depleting the stacks in the middle. So now he's like, oh, now I'm drawing. Now I'm scoring up five. Now I'm scoring a six. So I don't even think we got up to the sixes in this game.
No, we didn't. I have to say, playing that after playing Glory to Rome, and I know it's apples and oranges. I know they're pretty different games. But yeah. For my quirky, very strategic card game fix, I'm a Glory to Rome guy all the way.
Yeah.
That Glory to Rome is... That's hot. I mean, I love that stuff. And the reprint coming out very soon for you, who kickstarted it.
I did.
And me, who foolishly withdrew my kickstarting, but I pre-ordered anyway, so I should get it.
Yeah. Well, and I would say that for a strategic game, that one is definitely better anyway. I really like Innovation. I think
it's still a good game.
But you there are situations a lot of times in that game where, just like our game, you know, oh, you've got some ability that you can do, and I just can't do anything about it. And, you know, turn after turn goes by and I can't stop it.
Right.
You know? But that makes the gameplay, with more players, I think that happens less. So anyway, I think that's probably it. Now, as far as other geekery for me, I have been, reading a little bit. Now that I'm finished with Ready Player One, I went back to, my one last Dresden book that I wasn't finished with, which is the short story anthology Side Jobs. I'm a little bit more than halfway through that, and that's a lot of fun. It's a little bit light, even a lighter read for Dresden because it's shorter stories. But
you'd be proud of me. I started book two.
Well done.
Well, that was
good job.
Good job, buddy.
Good job, friend.
Oh, you're reading.
And I also, I think I mentioned last show that a listener had written in talking about this series called the 20 Palaces series. First book's called Child of Fire.
Yes.
And I started reading that book, and it seems very interesting to me. And then I went on like the website or somewhere on the internet, and they mentioned that there were three books written in this series, and now the author has canceled the series, and he's not going to write any more books.
You can't do that.
Well, he basically said that it wasn't really his doing. He basically said that the publisher told him it's not selling well enough, and so we're not going to fund you to write another one.
Can he find another publisher? I don't know how that works.
I don't really either, but it just sort of made it sound like this is like, I guess he's been struggling with even the first three books, you know, and it was almost one of those things where, you know, this book didn't sell well. Yeah, we'll give you another shot. This one still didn't sell well. You know, and so by this time, he just said, no, we're not going to do it anymore. And, you know, and it's actually kind of funny on his website. It's almost like he anticipated, I forget the name, Harry Connolly, I think is the author's name. He anticipated, I guess, some of the questions and the complaints that people would have. And so he did this huge, long, like, FAQ of, you know, basically answering all the questions. Well, does this mean you're going to make it, you know, later on? And then he answers the question, you know. And
I thought he was answering, like, plot points.
No, he was basically answering, like, imagined questions from readers. That's
how book six of Song of Ice and Fire should be. It should just be just a big FAQ where people are like, so what happens with this? Yeah, he dies. What happens to him? He becomes king of Westeros. There's a big battle. It's a lot of things go on. You would have been very excited.
Now let me get a cheeseburger in peace.
Right. Oh, jeez.
I don't know if I'm going to continue reading it then. I'm sure they're good books, but it sounds like they're books similar to any kind of a series that you think is going to go for a long time. And they, you know, where a lot of the plot points aren't revealed, things aren't really explained very well, in hopes that you'll, you know, get the explanation in later books. I feel like that's just going to frustrate me if I try to read those, you know. But I have the first one already. I might as well just read through that.
Well, I have a recommendation then.
Go ahead.
For a fantasy series, A Song of Ice and Fire.
I know
you've read the first three.
I know. Here's the sad thing. We've talked about this before. I have a Nook, and yes. So I'm very much into the e-reader thing. Yes. I have Feast for Crows in paperback form, and I just don't feel like reading it. So I may have to plunk down the $10 to get it on my e-reader just to
whatever it takes.
Motivate me to read it.
So. But in all seriousness, if you want like a light fantasy series, the Dragonlance series is a nice kind of popcorn fantasy series.
I don't really like fantasy that much. That's the
okay.
thing. I mean, Game of Thrones and the Song of Ice and Fire series was a real departure for me because in general, I don't like reading about knights and kings and swords and that kind of stuff.
Sorry.
That's what I mean. That's like why like urban fantasy and that kind of stuff where it seems like more gritty and real, like, you know, Law and Order meets something magical. And that sounds more interesting to me.
Fine.
Don't be offended. you're not the ambassador for fantasy.
Those were the books of my youth.
Okay.
You monster.
I'm so sorry. Let's go play some Talisman and we'll feel better about it. Jeez. I think that's probably it as far as geekery goes for me. I've been watching Mad Men, so that's not really a geeky show.
What about
show,
video games?
Oh, yeah. Video games. That's right. I've started trying to play more video games because I've been using my Xbox for the last year pretty much for Netflix and Hulu Plus. And with the occasional game where I played through Portal 2 when it came out. I went to GameStop and I bought a used copy of Blood Bowl, the video game. And it was confusing, to say the least. And I felt like the text on the tutorials was hard to read. So even when it said to go through the tutorials, I wasn't really understanding what was going on. So I'm like most video games, I'm like, I don't need the tutorial. Screw this. I'll just, you know, start from the beginning and I'll figure it out. You know, it'll prompt me and tell me what to do. Mm-hmm. Nope. So I got to the very first part of this game and I didn't even know how to pick the ball up.
Nice.
Yeah. So I'm not sure if I'm going to spend any more time on it.
Now, speaking of Blood Bowl, we had a few people email the show. It is still in print. Apparently, I didn't know what the heck was going on.
Yeah.
It's still very clearly in print, and you can buy it exactly how I said. I want an ice box. Yeah, you can get it in an ice box.
I totally thought the same thing. I didn't think it was still in print. So,
but I'm still not going to buy it yet.
Because it's like $82.50 on the Games Workshop website.
Because I think that'll be the next deluxe re-release from GW.
You think so?
Yeah. At some point. Yeah. I'm going to, because if you look at it, it still very much has that 80s Games Workshop vibe.
I think third edition came out in 94 or something like that. I mean, it's been a while.
So I'm going to hold on.
Maybe not 94. Please don't write us in if we got the date wrong.
Actually, sometime. It was 96.
Sometime in the 90s. I don't know. I'm almost tempted to buy that one just to there's no way to, there's no real easy way to play test that guy. It's not like you can try before you buy on Blood Bowl, I don't think.
Well, our buddy Sam, he's going to teach me, and then
does he have the actual miniatures game?
I think at the very least he has the computer game.
Okay, so, yeah, the PC game.
So right. I'll screen it for you. I'll run some interference. I'll see how it is, and then if it's worthy, I'll pass it along to you.
I'm sure I could find the rules online and read through them. So
there's only something online that you could search.
If only. So yeah, but the video game I would not necessarily recommend. It only cost me like $9 at GameStop.
Since you hate fantasy, I won't recommend Skyrim.
I don't. Yeah, I don't think I'm too interested in that one. But
Arkham Asylum, you should try though.
Yeah, that one I think I might check out. And what was the other one that was? Oh, L.A. Noire, I was interested in. You played that one, didn't you?
Yeah, it's the setting and the theme is top notch, but it's real samey. I mean, just every case is the same.
Oh, okay.
I mean, like the particulars about the case are interesting. You know, it's kind of like an old pulp crime novel.
Yeah,
but it's pretty much like, drive to location A, get clues. Drive to location B, question someone. Drive back to location A, now knowing what you know from the interrogation. And it always ends up in either a foot chase or a car chase. Like pretty much always. It just got very samey. But the theme, they really captured the feel of the crime noir sort of thing. It was just really, really cool.
Okay. Exactly. Well, you know, let me put this out to the Game On listening public.
Here we go.
Because you guys did such a great job of giving me examples of things to read for, you know, my next books to read. I wanted to ask about Nintendo DS games. And maybe you could help with this because you play some DS. But I really like the Professor Layton puzzle series of games. I've played through the Diabolical Box. I'm currently playing through Professor Layton and the Unwound Future. I'm about halfway through that guy. And I know there's the other one, the first one, The Curious Village. So I can get that one. And I think there's even a new one that just came out too. So yeah, I'd be all set for a while if I just got those two games. But if I was looking for something in the puzzly genre that isn't overtly puzzly, you know?
That's like not abstract puzzles.
That's not like a Bejeweled, you know, or whatever. But something where it is seem like it's like a mystery or something. I found a few that were at the GameStop that were kind of like murder mysteries. I even saw one that was it was like an attorney where you had to go like look for clues. He had like a cool
Phoenix
name.
Wright.
That's what it was. Yeah. Yeah.
Phoenix Wright, Ace Attorney.
Yeah. Yeah. That's it. And so
those are good. Those are they good?
Hmm? Okay. So, I mean, I would just put that out to you listeners. You know, do you have any suggestions for games of that nature that are kind of puzzly and or mystery or something like that? Or, you know, something that feels like you're trying to solve something, but isn't about moving little blocks around to make them in a row or something?
See, now you should really play Arkham Asylum.
Because that really is how that game
is. Oh, man. Yeah.
Okay. All right. When are you going to be done with it?
It's not my copy. I'm borrowing it.
Okay.
But you can get it used at GameStop for nothing.
My boss said that when he was done, he would let me borrow it.
Well, there you go.
Okay. That's fine. All right. That's a lot of video games to talk about. Sorry for that, board game and card game fans. But that's pretty much all I've been playing. So that's the rundown.
You're listening to Game On with Cody and John. We're just like the Dice Tower, but with 100% less Tom Vassell.
Can I kick it?
Yes, you can.
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 Can I kick it?
So if you listen to this show, you probably like games.
I hope.
I'm just saying. And, you know,
you've come to us from This Week in Tech.
That's true. Oh, yeah, we didn't mention that in the rundown. But did you know, listeners, that the This Week in Tech podcasting network there, TWIT, they're coming out with a new podcast called Game On. They did not consult with us.
What is it with these podcasts that come on after us?
And I don't know.
And just don't do their research.
Now, I'm not saying that we have some kind of trademark on Game On. Of course, there's a bazillion things that say Game On. But in the podcasting world, in the sort of geeky podcasting world, it's a small pond, really.
Due diligence, that's all we're asking for.
I know. So anyway, if you've come here from the TWIT network and, you know, you're looking for the Game On video game podcast from them.
Welcome.
Welcome, and learn a little bit about board games and card games.
I mean, honestly, and how long is This Week in Tech going to be around? That's probably just a flash in the pan. It probably has, what, 6 listeners?
At least, maybe 6.
It's not going to stay.
No, I wouldn't worry too much about it. So.
What the hell's a Leo Laporte?
If you do want to write into Leo Laporte and mention that, hey, I listened to Game On with Cody and John, and you know, what do you think you're doing?
He'll be like, who the hell are Cody and John? We would.
Still, it'd be funny.
Yeah, it would.
All right. But yeah, if
so, Kickstarter.
A Kickstarter. If you're a gamer and you hopefully have heard about Kickstarter because it's become this new hotness in game production lately.
If they haven't, give them the 30-second pitch.
All right. So Kickstarter.com is basically a funding website. It's almost like a PBS pledge drive online, but it's very project specific, and it's meant to fund creative projects of all types. It might be short films or art projects or, you know, things of that nature, or in many cases games. So there's a whole section on Kickstarter on games, and the way that it works is that if you have a project you want to fund, like let's say that Cody and I wanted to make Game On the Game.
Yes.
This is not my idea, because actually Sean Johnson and several other Game On Game Night folks came up with this, and I thought it was quite funny.
Game On the Game?
Game On the Game.
Okay.
And the purpose of the game is to get your crappy Kickstarter project funded. That's the object of the game.
I like it.
Anyway, we come up with a little design for a game. Maybe we make a little video explaining what the game is going to be about. Then you would put it up on Kickstarter, and you would set a funding goal for it. And so we worked out that it's going to take $100,000 to make
minimum
this game. Minimum. And so, you know, you would put that goal on there, and then you'd set also a time limit for it, and then you basically press go, just like an eBay auction or something like that, and then people can go to your page and can back that project. And what they do is they use a system called Amazon Payments, which will, it won't charge you at the time when you make the pledge, but it basically is kind of locking you in to this payment if the project is funded.
It doesn't lock you into it.
Well, no, I'm you can go in and cancel it or reduce it or whatever. Yeah, I'm not saying that there's no turning back, but
it counts that money towards the goal.
Exactly. Yeah. Sorry. And so if it gets to the up to that limit by the time before the timer runs out on it, then that project is considered funded. And then on the day that the project ends, basically all of those transactions will be processed, and the person who's designing the game will get a big pile of money, minus, I think, 3%, which is what Kickstarter's take is on the whole thing. And so one thing that's interesting about it, much like PBS, is that, you know, if you've ever watched PBS pledge drives, and they'll show the John Tesh concert, you know, and then, you know, we love the John Tesh concert here on PBS. And if you want to support us with a pledge of $100, you'll get the John Tesh CD, you know, and then for $200, you'll get the CD and the DVD, you know, and so they have these little perks that go along with your pledges. And that's the way Kickstarter works as well, is that they'll have different levels of sponsorship, where if you back for a certain amount, then you'll, you know, for example, for a game, you know, maybe for $10, you wouldn't get a copy of the game, but you might get your name written in the rule book.
Yeah, and these are all perks that are set by the creators of the game, not by Kickstarter.
Yes, that's right, yeah. So and you can set it for whatever you want, but it might include promo cards. It might include a special copy of the game. When you get up to much higher levels, then it becomes fun things like you get to name one of the cards in the game, or you get to, I think the really high ones, it's, you know, the company that makes the game will fly to your house and will teach you how to play it, and will make, you know, make tequila sunrises for you and wear a nice hat or something.
There was a project I've just sponsored is for Castles and Crusades, the role-playing game.
Oh, okay.
They're coming out with a new book called Classic Monsters, and their highest level was only $100. And for that, you get a copy of the new book with special, like, color plates, because most of them are just black and white. And then you get a hardcover copy of pretty much all four or five of their core books, personalized. You get the PDF version of it, and you get like a T-shirt and a bunch of, I mean, it's stuff that would cost more than $100, but
wow.
Like some of those perks are really, I mean, it entices you just because, I mean, that's a good deal. I'm like, well, yeah. You know, I may not give two flips about the book, but
I mean, at its most basic, it kind of walks and talks like the GMT P500. I mean, it's almost like a pre-order sort of thing. Now with the P500, it's more or less once they get 500 pre-orders, then that triggers the production of the game itself. You know, in this case, you know, for that sort of medium level of sponsorship, $40-$50, whatever the game would cost, you get a copy of the game, you know. Yep. And then as you go higher and higher, you just get more and more perks that go along with it. So this has really taken the
internet. That was a good 30-second
It only took about 5 minutes today.
Right.
I kept getting interrupted. I'm just saying.
Sorry, that's true.
So this is taking the internet by storm. Of course, you know, back in September, we talked about we had our sponsor, Clever Mojo Games, that was having a couple of different Kickstarter projects for some of their games. And their initial game, Alien Frontiers, was one of the darlings, still is one of the darlings of Kickstarter as far as one of the highest funded games and just one of the games that really paved the way for other games to be funded in this way. And the fact that it was such a fantastic game and such great production, I think it really opened people's eyes to the potential that Kickstarter can have. So that's just sort of a primer, if you will, on Kickstarter. But if you're in the gaming hobby at all, you've probably heard of it already. But we wanted to just sort of delve in a little bit to why is this so popular right now? What is the potential for it? Is it a flash in the pan, like Cody said? Is it something that has some staying power? What are the pros and cons? Cody, give me kind of your thoughts about Kickstarter in general.
I think the idea of it is really cool. It's kind of this grassroots, almost like a PBS thing, kind of, I have this great idea, who will help me fund it? And then people help you fund it and you get perks. But it plays to gamers so well because of two main things, promo cards or items and the hype machine, two big things in the board gaming world. You have, gamers love promos. I mean, if you go on eBay, if you go on the BGG marketplace and you see how much, if I sold my space crane from Alien Frontiers, I could make some good money off of that. But, I don't want to. It's mine. But promo cards and things like that, or like people go to the FFG event days and they bring back the exclusive thing and they sell it for $50-100 on eBay.
That's the word right there, exclusive.
Exclusive. Yeah, limited edition.
People love that.
Blah, blah, blah. Yeah. So, that's big and that flocks gamers. And then, the hype, BGG, when people get excited that a new picture of an upcoming game has released, now you have creators that can make videos and answer questions directly and say, okay, we're 80% of the way to getting funded and we just need 20% more and, we're going to do all these cool things. And if we beat our goal and if we make more than we pledge, then we can do all these really cool things. So tell everyone and we can really get this going. And
yeah, because that's been the thing with a lot of recent games that have been way overfunded, 300, 400, 500% mm-hmm. of their goal, is that then they start making these stretch goals for, if we can make it to 50,000, then we're going to have the cool little, meeples. And then
Glory to Rome most recently did that because the black box of that, it destroyed its goal.
Oh, yeah.
Because everyone, even people who'd never played a game before, said, that game is ugly as sin. We want a pretty looking game. Mm-hmm. And some people backed out of it.
Some
that
people,
was dumb.
Some people who are wearing a blue shirt and sitting across from me right now.
Yeah, that's me.
Okay.
They kept adding perks. But then sometimes it brings up questions because I know Eminent Domain, they beat theirs by like $10,000.
Oh, yeah.
And they're kind of like, well, where's the money going? It's funding other things. It's like, okay.
Okay.
Fantastic. But go ahead.
Yeah, well, and that maybe kind of leads into perhaps some cons of this. Now, what I like about Kickstarter is exactly what you're saying is, exclusivity is kind of cool. I think people are drawn to that. And I think the idea that that it's fleeting, get in on this deal now before it runs out, before the clock expires on it,
That's a marketing technique,
It totally
it's like,
is.
This deal is only going to be around for this much longer. You better jump on.
Yeah, and I think that's where it becomes a real psychological game because I think that one of the complaints I've heard about Kickstarter is, it's just funding crummy games, That now a bunch of garbage can get made, and people will buy it. And a lot of it is because, people think they'll get a glimpse of a game and say, oh, that looks kind of cool. And then they'll see, the clock's ticking, man. If I don't get in on this, then it's not like Fantasy Flight or Rio Grande or Mayfair is making this game. So if I don't get in on this Kickstarter, I may never get a copy of it because maybe they're only making it just for the Kickstarter people.
Or maybe it won't get made at all.
Or maybe it won't get made at all, And so it's that sort of – it's almost like a gambling sort of feel to it, So I think that's a dangerous thing for games that are terrible. It's probably good for those people who are trying to get those terrible games made because, hey, they get a pile of money, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I think that you start to get hit or miss on the quality of games. I don't know. What do you think about it?
I don't know. I think gamers are smart enough at least to you know, they'll need to do some research. They want to at least see a rule book. You know, I think there was some game on Kickstarter where, like, the gal that was hosting it refused to post the rule book or anything.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And her argument was, you know, well, I wouldn't, you know, why would someone spend, I've spent hundreds of hours or thousands of hours developing this game. You know, what would you think that it would be a terrible game if I spent that much time on it?
It's like, well, like, I don't know. Let's see. You know,
seen a lot of people spend a lot of time on terrible games.
Yeah. So I think there's more hits than misses. I mean, sure, you know, there's a lot of crap out there, but I think the real gems of Kickstarter, you know, your Alien Frontier, you know, pretty much Alien Frontier, Sunrise City, Eminent Domain, all the, some of the other Clever Mojo, Tasty Mitchell stuff, that stuff has been really successful. And, yeah. And you know, like the Glory to Rome reprint, just huge hits. And I think those kind of outshine the misses at this point.
Yeah, well, and you know, Glory to Rome, established game. Everyone really likes the game. A lot of people don't like the art. So that was, you know, that's the main impetus for making that version of the game.
I want to have a conversation with the people that say, I really like the art, to the original art to Glory to Rome. Because the best I've heard of it is, I don't mind it. Yeah. Like, I've talked to some people the game on game night, you know, we were talking, they don't like the new art. They think it's too minimalistic or clip art.
Yeah.
Wrong. But when I'm like, oh, so you like the old art? I'm like, that's fine. It's, it's just like this ringing endorsement.
I think for that particular game, it's just that the light cartooniness of the art doesn't match the gameplay, which can really be quite thinky, you know? Yeah. So, I mean, it would be like if they made Sid Meier's Civilization the board game with, like, you know, Simpsons characters, yeah, or something. It wouldn't make a lot of sense. But anyway, I digress. I have backed Alien Frontiers. No, I take that back. I didn't. We were fortunate enough to get a review copy of that game, but had I known about it, I definitely would have backed it.
Nice.
And then I backed Eminent Domain. Recently, and these have not been produced yet, I backed a little card game called Super Showdown, which is like a comic book superhero game. And that was one that, you know, it was $15 and I looked at it and the artwork looked cool and, hey, superheroes are fun. And, you know, and I threw the money in there, but that's why I wanted to bring this topic up, is it's such a psychological element to this that I just said, it's a superhero game. It's $15. The artwork looks good. I'll buy it.
Mm-hmm.
But I have pored over my local game store and not purchased like 10, $15 got-dollar games before. You know, and they're sitting there right in front of me. And yet something that has not even been produced yet, that I don't even know the details of the gameplay that much, I'm willing to plunk my money down for.
Yeah, I mean, that's why that element right there is why there's only two projects I've ever backed. And, you know, Glory to Rome was one of them, and I ended up not doing it because I hadn't played the game yet.
Yeah.
This CNC bundle is the other one. I'll probably stick to that one. Is just because I could see myself committing for a lot of money, because a lot of it's like, oh, that's a neat idea.
Yeah.
You know, we both looked at this game called Ball Craps, where it was yeah, like you could bet. It's like a party game. Like if you're watching a baseball game with some friends or a football game on TV, it's basically just like a betting mat. You can bet. It's like, oh, I bet the next play will be a pass. And it's just for fun, you know. It's just for, yeah, you know, whatever you want to.
I mean, if you have a gambling problem, I guess you could play with real money, but you could also make it small stakes or make it potato chips or something.
Yeah, you know, it would just be fun to do. But, you know, it's like I had to be like, well, I'm probably not going to use that often, you know. And so I decided not to back it. But I just –
It got backed, though. I mean, it got funded.
Yeah. I mean, but when I leaf through there, I see all these things like, oh, that looks cool. It's like, it's just backing. I'm not committing to anything. And then, you know, $10,000 later, you funded 800 projects. And
yeah. Well, you can even see on people's profiles for Kickstarter, it says how many things they funded. And some people have funded 100 projects, you know. Yeah. So I think there's almost even a culture of this now of people who are – you know, funding these things. It's like being in a club, you know. Yeah. Oh, were you one of the ones who backed Glory to Rome? Oh, yeah, I sure was. Man, it's going to be cool when we get it. You know, so there's that cultural aspect.
It's that grassroots thing of, like, you know, not to get all preachy here, but it's like, you know, someone has a dream, someone has a vision, and it's like, you know, with your help, citizens, we can, if everyone pitches in a little bit, we can make this game a reality or whatever.
And I guess that's fine. I mean, if people are willing to put their money down for something, if they get what they're paying for.
You vote with your dollar.
Yeah. But it's just funny to me that people are voting with their dollar without even really seeing the substance of what it is, you know?
Yeah.
Without even seeing, like, the reputation of a company. I mean, I just talked in the rundown about wanting to get a copy of Kingdom Builder by Don Vaccarino.
Don, is it?
No? My buddy Don, you know, Vaccarino.
You're very informal.
Yeah. And DX, I call him DX.
Suck it.
And you know, and that game I basically want to get a copy of based upon the reputation of the designer. And I know the production quality of the game will be good because it's from Queen Games, and I know they make good stuff. And that's pretty much it. I mean, the rule book's online. I've kind of flum-thumbed through it. Yeah, it looks okay. But that was enough to make me want to get that game. But I feel like I have more of a leg to stand on than...
Well, they have a reputation.
Because they have the reputation, yeah. And now, places like Clever Mojo Games also has a reputation. So something like Sunrise City, their new game they're coming out with, I feel more more inclined to want to back something like that.
But in a lot of ways, that's the beauty of Kickstarter. Because, okay... Game On Games, you know, they're coming out with the game. Oh, we've never played anything.
Mm-hmm.
But the buy-in can be a lot less. It's like, you know, I can throw in $10. Yeah, I probably won't get a copy of the game, but
yeah.
You know, it's like I can kinda dip my toe in the water versus like Kingdom Builder, say it's $50 or whatever. You either pay your $50 and get it, or you don't pay your $50 and you get nothing. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I guess I see what you're saying there. It's just psychological. It's very interesting.
So to bring it all around, do you think it's going to last? Do you think Kickstarter or something like it, maybe not Kickstarter by itself, but, you know, something in that vein of the funding from the ground up sort of a thing?
I think that you just said it yourself. People vote with their wallets. Or they should. A lot of times they don't. They're stupid.
And this is something you make fun of me for.
What?
Voting with my wallet. Because if I'm Mr. Customer Service, I'm real anal about customer service. And if I go to a shop or a store and I get bad customer service, I'm like, I'm not going to shop there. I'm not going to buy anything from there. And you've teased me for that.
No, I'm fine when you're talking about like a game store or something like that. It's the people that say, I'm never going to Best Buy because some 18-year-old kid, you know, didn't treat me right. You know, so I'm never going to go to a Best Buy anymore or Walmart, you know. Mm. It's like, come on, get over yourself. It's a huge multinational corporation. You know,
maybe.
Big deal.
Maybe.
But people just got to chill out sometimes and not take things so seriously. But I think that this will be the telling thing about Kickstarter is in the overall scheme of all these projects that are getting funded, how many of them will get the word of mouth and the reputation of, that was a good game. That was a good experience. I had a good experience. Like, you know, people have had a good experience with Alien Frontiers. People have had... perhaps a good experience with Eminent Domain. You know, I've heard it both ways on that one.
Definitely.
As far as how smoothly that process has gone. You know, other games that are coming out, you know, it's how good is that process going to be? Because eventually people are going to say, yeah, this is great. I've had so many good experiences. Let's keep this going. Or they're going to say, this was not a smart way to do this. And I think it'll start to fizzle out if there's too many bad games and too many just bad experiences.
Yeah. I think a lot of it you could trace back to just our culture and how it's changed with the recession here in the last 5 years. Because a lot of it is now you have – I'm not saying it's completely tied to it. But if you think about it, now it's all about building from zero. It's not all about, oh, I've got this idea. I'm going to spend – you know, I'm going to rack up – a designer saying, I'm going to rack up all this debt and just produce this game. Boom. Yeah. If it sticks, it sticks. If it doesn't, it doesn't. Now it's very much a, you know, let's see if it's there before we spend the money.
Yeah.
Sort of thing. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah. And I would say that if, you know, Cody and I don't really have any aspirations to be game designers, but if we did and we had a good idea, I'm sure we'd probably be thinking about doing a Kickstarter campaign because, you know, with the few contacts that we have, we might be able to scare up some money for something like that. But I think that's going to be the real telltale thing is over time, how many good games are actually being produced. You know, are we seeing any award winners like, you know, Alien Frontiers, you know, winning some awards for, you know, the equality there.
Yeah. And the other thing that it's pretty neat for, like our buddies over at the Spiel, you know, they just use Kickstarter to fund their big trip to go to Essen and do a bunch of videos and reports from there. And if you haven't seen it, they're really good stuff.
Yeah, they're cranking out a bunch of them. It's great.
Yeah, and so that's kind of neat. You know, I doubt we're going to raise money to go to Essen, but, you know, the fact that the infrastructure is there now so that people can come up with these innovative projects, I think that's very exciting. It's something that breaks the mold. And, oh, I'm getting the finger.
No, I agree.
Not the middle one.
But. No, I agree with you. And that brings up a very interesting point. The last thing I kind of wanted to talk about is, it seems like when you look at the mission statement for Kickstarter or how exactly it's set up, it's to fund creativity. You know, it's to fund those folks. You know, the guy who's got a video camera and he wants to make a documentary about whatever, and you know he gets some support and he can make his film. I think that's great. I mean, I love that, and I love that for these game designers who are just ground up kind of things. But what I've started to see on Kickstarter is companies that are established using Kickstarter for basically a pre-order system.
Yeah,
and like they've already really got they've already worked out their deal with the producer of the game, the producer of all the bits and everything. Maybe they've already done a print run, and now they're using Kickstarter to do an additional print run of the game.
Yeah,
you know, I think that really kind of flies in the face of what Kickstarter is all about, and I'm not sure if I really like that.
Yeah, that's tricky. I mean, I don't think Kickstarter is going to say no to the money, but
no.
But yeah, you're right. I mean, I don't know how hard. I don't think it would be that hard if companies just, you know, like kind of the way GMT does it in a way. You know?
You could have your own pre-order system on your own website.
And have your own perk-based thing.
Put perks in there and stuff like that.
But the trick is, you know, people go to Kickstarter, and exactly why I avoid it for long stretches of time, they see one project, they fund it, and they're like, oh, that's another one. Oh, I'll just throw another $5 there. They want people to gravitate to them through the Kickstarter site.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see where it goes. I thought it was going to be a flop when I first saw it. I'm just like, no, that's not going to work. And then... Yeah, and then, you know, Alien Frontiers happened, all the games after that happened, and here we are.
So you say you backed Castles and Crusades thing.
Yeah.
Anything else that you of note that you would want to mention? Or is that
that's me? It. It was that and Glory to Rome, and I backed out of it like a fool.
Well, and for me, like I said, that Super Showdown game, you know, remains to be seen on what that's gonna do, but you know, it was cheap. I forgot to mention along those same lines, our buddy Sean Johnson, he backed a Kickstarter project for this game called, I think it's called Kamakura.
Okay.
Little card game. I mean, and he showed it to me, and I didn't mention in the rundown, he taught Brian and I how to play it. And it's like a samurai sort of fighting game. The production quality in the cards and the artwork, not great at all. The production quality in the cards might have been okay. The artwork was not great. And the gameplay was really bad.
Ooh.
Like, it was just not fun at all. And we were kind of laughing about it. And Sean's like, it wasn't that much money. So, you know, he kind of shrugged it off as not a big deal. He said the kids in his youth group at church love it. So,
there you go.
I guess they get some quality out of that. But I just thought it was just a terrible game. But, so, you know, you never know what you're going to get. And then there's a new game that's coming out called D-Day Dice.
Oh, that looks good.
World War II game.
Did you back it?
I did back it, yeah.
Ooh.
And, you know, I might be a hypocrite, actually, because I think that might fall also into the category of something that I think it might be Valley Games or somebody who was already planning on producing it, and they're deciding to use Kickstarter to the, you know.
I'm not sure.
As a pre-order system. I don't know.
I've been following it on BGG. It looks pretty neat.
It does, yeah. And the video for it on the Kickstarter page looks pretty cool, so... artwork's nice. Well, we'll see how that one turns out. So, you know, I think it's we can probably wrap this up by saying that, you know, you get what you pay for.
And Game On the Game is available now. It's a 4-hour Ameritrash Euro miniatures game, and
it's like with scale model miniatures that they're actually
diamond studded.
They're life size.
That's right.
And the board is football field size. back at today, but you know, I think you get what you pay for. Usually, hopefully, so hopefully you get more than what you pay for. But you know. Click cautiously on Kickstarter. You know, make sure you do a little bit of research. Board Game Geek still is a great resource because a lot of these games that are on Kickstarter, they're already putting up.
That's the vetting process.
It kind of is, you know. Yeah. You find a good mix of people. You're not always going to find the accurate information on Board Game Geek, but you get a lot of opinions from people. Yeah. But I think it's a really interesting concept, and I'm sure we'll be hearing a lot more. From that. So
yeah. So listeners, give us your thoughts on this Kickstarter for it. Either by writing to us at the Game On Inbox.
It's gameoninbox@gmail.com.
Or giving us a ringy dingy at the Game On Hotline.
That's 4138 Game On.
That's right. Flo will take your call. We would like to hear from you because we always get the best feedback and the stuff that we obviously missed through you guys. So write or call today, and we'll talk about next episode because I think we'll get some pretty good feedback on this.
Yeah, give us your stories. Have you had good experiences, bad experiences? What's your overall feeling on Kickstarter? You think it's a flash in the pan? You think it's going to be here to stay? You know, what are you thinking about it? So that is a little talk about Kickstarter. You know, I think there's actually also some other funding websites that are like that.
Mm-hmm. That's got
to
be.
I'd be interested to learn about those too. So I'm going to do some research on that. All right, so you ready to move on to our review?
Let's kick it.
Let me hear you now. I don't know. I don't know where I'm gonna go when the volcano blows. Now my girl, quickly.
All right, it's time for Buy or Try or Deny, and we're going with more of a. I would say this is more of a family title.
Oh, absolutely.
But yeah. but still suitable. Well, we're going to ask that question. Is it suitable for everyone? And it is Eruption by Stratus Games.
That's right.
Oh, I remembered. Well, and so John's going to give you his lean and mean rundown of the rules.
Yeah, when I think of family games, really the theme of running for your life from a volcano, that's what I think of.
Not at the top of my list.
No. But I guess that's sort of the theme of Survive, right?
You're trying to escape. The island's sinking. Yeah.
Right. But there's a volcano at the very end of it, right?
And yes.
That's the end of the game.
I think that's what's causing it.
Oh, okay.
Oh, speaking of, this is a total non sequitur.
Go for it.
Okay. I was about to joke, I've not read the Survive fan fiction or anything. I wouldn't know. Did you know there is a Settlers of Catan novel coming out?
Oh, my gosh.
I'm not even making this up. Settlers of Catan novel.
Really?
I hope we get a copy.
Is it about the Settler of Catan? Do you remember that from Gen Con a couple years ago?
Yeah, I remember. No.
There's a guy dressed up in like a neon green like spandex suit. He looked like he was the Settler of Catan.
Yeah.
He carried a big stuffed sheep underneath his arm.
And the cover art for the book, it's just the game. Like, they didn't even bother to get new art. So I'm like, what's the story? So we landed on this island. We built some roads, some settlements. Those settlements eventually became cities. We traded with our neighbors, and eventually one of us hit an arbitrary point of which we considered ourselves superior to the others.
Check it out today on Kickstarter.com.
Holy crap.
No, just kidding. Wow, that sounds terrible.
Yeah, so I hope it's a trilogy.
Well, see, that's the weird thing is that a game like Pillars of the Earth, which is based upon a novel, we don't give that a second thought. Right. But if we make a novel out of that game, I mean, it's dry, right? I mean, I don't know. It seems like it could be okay.
Well, there's some, I mean, man, this is a big deal topic here, but there are some games where a novel wouldn't be terrible. You take something really themey like Descent or Earth Reborn or something. It's like, I could totally do Space Hulk the novel.
All right, we're tabling that. That will be a future big deal topic.
That'll be episode 175.
Okay. Eruption. Yes, Eruption from Stratus Games. This game is for 2 to 6 players. Plays in about 45 minutes to an hour at most, I think, especially if everyone's playing.
30 to 45.
Well, we played with only 2 players, though. If it was 6 players, it might take a little bit longer.
Okay.
I don't know.
Hey, but it's your show, buddy.
It's a quick game.
Game on with the John.
Okay. And this game is about escaping a volcano. Well, it's really less about escaping the volcano and more about trying to direct lava flow from the volcano to destroy other people's villages.
And digging in.
That's right. You have your own village around the edge of the board, and the center is this erupting volcano. And then there's a series of hexagonal tiles that will have different lava flows going in different directions. And so you're going to be eliminated from the game when your temperature gets too high. But by temperature, I mean that around the outside of the board, there's actually a track that when lava starts to come into your village, every turn that lava is hitting your village, your temperature is going to raise. Mm-hmm. And so once it gets up to like 300 degrees, yeah, something like that, you know, you burn up in the fire, and then that's it.
It's kind of neat. It was I was like, what is this circular track? And then I just saw like plus 10 degrees, plus 20 degrees, plus 30 degrees.
Yeah.
How are they going to do it for the European version? You think they'll go over to Celsius?
I don't know. Maybe they'll have like a chart or something or a...
I had a revelation the other day that, you know, it was some cooking thing or whatever, but like I never thought that like European ovens would be in Celsius.
Oh, it's a good point.
I was just like, I heard it and I'm like, that seems like a low setting for the temperature. And Galen's like, it's Celsius.
I would I'd have to keep some kind of chart with me all the time if I went and visited there. So
temperature on.
Yeah, okay. So on your turn, it's a pretty easy game as far as what you do. You're going to turn over a tile. Well, first of all, the first thing you're going to do on your turn is you're going to assess damage. So anything that's gotten into your village is going to raise your temperature by 20 degrees. And, you know, and then you will draw a tile and you'll place it onto the board. And it has to all the sides have to match up so the lava flows match up. And then after doing that, you can play an action card. There are a whole series of different action cards that do different things. They might cool off your village, so that's like a rain card, which can cool it off a few degrees. You might be able to remove a tile from the board. You might be able to rotate a tile. And also, these cards give you the ability, if you want to instead use them, you can discard them to get a particular resource. There are 3 resources in the game. Straw, was it sheep, clay, ore, grain?
No. Barely.
No, it's straw, wood, and stone. And you're going to use these three things to build walls, to try to wall off the lava flow. And so you definitely want to try to build those around your village. And I think there's like seven or so spaces around your village that you can place these
walls. It's a lot of area to protect.
Yeah. But you can also put them at the end of a lava flow to kind of block it so that it, you know, stays away from your village. And so you can play a wall on your turn to try to do that. The idea with the walls is that later on in the turn, if someone tries to place a lava flow tile to where it would go over a wall, you have to roll some dice to determine whether it's going to actually break through the wall or if the wall will stand up. So there's two dice in the game. There's a white die, which represents the wall, and an orange die, which represents the lava. You'll roll both of those dice together, and then whichever one is higher will be your winner. You'll also get a plus one bonus for a wooden wall and a plus two bonus for a stone wall. You'll add that to the white die total. Just that simple. If the wall holds up, the wall stays, and you have to put the tile someplace else. Or if it loses, then you remove the wall, and the player can place that tile where they want to. So this also happens with walls that are near your village. Those walls will get rolled for at the very beginning during your assess damage phase, where you'll roll to determine whether those walls are going to hold up, whether they're going to get knocked down. And if you have a wall at the beginning of your turn and it gets knocked down, that'll raise your temperature by 10 degrees, whereas it'll get raised by 20 degrees if there wasn't any wall there at all. So that is basically the whole game. You're going to be placing these tiles to try to kind of screw your neighbors and get the lava to flow towards them. You'll be playing cards, and then you'll be building these walls. You get resources in the game by discarding those action cards for resources. There's also spaces on the board with the different resources listed, and if you drop your tile onto one of those spaces, then you'll get the resource that is pictured there. So that is pretty much the whole game there. It's a very light, like Cody said, family game. I think it's a good, I wouldn't even necessarily, it's not really a gateway game. I think it's even lighter than that.
Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah, I think that this game very well could be on the shelves in a mass market setting, or I think it's the kind of game that could have been picked up by something like a Hasbro or something like that. And that's a compliment. I mean, as far as accessibility of the game, I think it's definitely better than a lot of mass market games. So, thoughts on Eruption? And first of all, why don't you tell our listeners about our review system?
Sure. Here at Game Moth, Cody and John, we have buy points, try points, and deny points. Buy points are aspects about the game we loved and that we think you'll love too. Try points are, you might like it, you might not, just a kind of a warning ahead of time. And the deny points, we think no sane human being would like anything about it on the deny points. So right. Let's talk buy points first.
If you're insane, then all these points will be exactly. Positives for you, right?
To start off, like you said, I think it's a good family game. Like I said, I wouldn't even say it's a gateway game. You put it very well. I think it plays... We played it with two players, and I thought it played well enough.
Yeah.
I think once you got to four, five, six players, I think it would be a great game, a great take that sort of a thing. I could see a family playing like, oh, I'm going to get daddy, and blah, blah, blah. It's the rules took a little bit of hashing together. Like, they're not difficult. The rule book, it could be a little better.
The rule book looks beautiful, and it looks like it's written really well, but it's not.
Yeah, so
things are kind of in the wrong order. Like they show the turn order one way, but then the explanation of all the stuff on the turn is in a completely different order in the book. So it took a little while to hash out those details.
So the rule book itself might be a deny point, but the flow of the game, I would say, is a buy point. There's not a lot going on.
The flow, like the lava flow.
Oh, yeah.
Clever.
I drew it up
there. They're so themey.
Thank you. So I think that, a lot of the problem with getting non-gamers into a game is like, oh, the minute they think they're overwhelmed, they just shut down. And I think there's just enough going on here where it's still interesting for the gamer to play, but easy enough for the non-gamer to follow along with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think the rules are once you have someone who knows them, I think they're easy to learn. I think like Cody said, a try or a deny point would be the rule book that for such a simple light game, it should be a two-sided sheet of paper for the rules.
Yeah.
But, and yet it's like an 8 to 10 page rule book, and it doesn't really need to be. I forgot to mention just two other little aspects of the game that are interesting rule-wise is that as your temperature increases, you can do more stuff on your turn.
I was going to mention, it's got a nice catch-up mechanic built into it.
Yeah, yeah. So as things are getting bad and you're getting, you know, to the point of where you might lose the game, you will get into these different danger zones, which will allow you to draw some cards, or you might be able to play an additional wall on your turn, or do all of those things. It's kind of cumulative as things get worse and worse and worse for you. So that was kind of cool. And then there's also these three things called eruption tiles, where if you're the first person to reach a particular spot on the temperature track, you can take one of these tiles, which is almost like another little mini volcano that and you can place that anywhere on the board, and that's a new source of lava flow that you can send towards an opponent. So again, this is some nice catch-up mechanics in the game that I think that's definitely a buy point as well. As far as try points go for me, another buy point is I think the production quality in the game is outstanding.
I was going to say the board,
the cards, the dice, all
the design.
Wooden sticks pieces for colored wooden pieces for the walls. Really well done.
Simple, clean, well done.
Yep. As far as try points, I think that the just getting through the rules the first time you will feel like, wow, I feel like I'm playing a game that's way more complicated than it actually is. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of a try point for me.
I don't know if I have any straight try points. I mean, it's like most of it I'd file under buy, the rule book under deny, but I don't know. I mean, it's a family style gateway game at best. So, I mean, know what you're getting into, but other than that, I think it's fun. Any other deny points you have?
Not really. I think it's a solid game, and I don't know a whole lot about Stratus games. I think they've produced a couple of other games, but it's really nice to see a polished product from a smaller game company, and I think this is a really good one. I think it just released recently. I'm not sure if it was released at Essen. We were fortunate enough to get a review copy from Stratus Games. We appreciate that. But I think this is a good one for families, especially if you have like small... If you like Survive, and you like that sort of little, you know, take that aspect to it, it has some similarities there, in that I really could see my 5-year-old getting that lava tile and going, ha ha, daddy, I got you. And that's always a fun thing.
I would love to play a 6-player game of this.
Yeah, we'll have to pull this out of the maybe game on game night or something.
So check out Eruption from Stratus Games.
Boom.
Well, listeners, that does it for a kicking episode of Game On with Cody and John. See what I did there?
I see it.
That's why listeners listen.
Is that why?
No. Okay. We want to thank Myriad Games for being our sponsor, who sponsors us on behalf of friendly professional game stores everywhere. What do we got next time?
Well, join us in a couple weeks where we're going to be finally bringing you the War Game episode.
No, really?
The War Game episode is coming in 2 weeks. So we've had a chance to play quite a number of different War Games. They may actually be slightly different War Games than what we presented on the Guild. I know we had a list there.
Probably.
But you know, we're new at this, and we're going to try our best to give you an overview of what War Games are all about and some of the ones that we tried. You know, we're broadening our horizons as gamers. Hopefully we can help to broaden yours a little bit if you're not familiar with War Games, and we'll learn together.
That's right.
In the meantime, we invite you to check out all the different ways that Wayne's going to tell you to contact us, our guild on Board Game Geek. We're up to like 550 members on the guild.
We're doing all right.
If you listen to the show, go just join the guild. It doesn't cost anything. It's just, you know, we want to see those numbers go up because it's fun to see numbers go up.
Ascending numbers are fun. I'll tell you what else is fun. The Game On Game Day on November 19th, I've seen in the future it's going to be a grand old time.
Oh.
So go to gameonpodcast.com, get the skinny on the thing, and I don't care where you're from, make it a local event for you and drive on over and join us to play a lot of games on the 19th.
Indeed. So that is about what we have for you this time. Have a great couple of weeks of gaming, and until next time,
game on.
This episode of Game On is sponsored by Myriad Games, on behalf of friendly professional game stores everywhere. If you'd like to contact Cody and John, send them an email at gameoninbox@gmail.com or leave a voicemail at 413-8-GAME-ON. For more content, check out our website at gameonpodcast.com. Join our guild on boardgamegeek.com and connect with other fans of the show. Become a fan of our show on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at GameOnPodcast. Game On with Cody and John is a proud member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network. Check out other great shows on pulpgamer.com. Thanks for listening, and until next time, Game On!
All right, so I'm going to start that over.
Yep. Nicely done.
It's been a while since we had a blooper in the show.
You didn't even say anything.
Welcome to the blooper, listeners.
Jeez.